Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
Welcome to True Crime to Go. What can I get for you?
In for something mellow. I don't know, maybe a little old Blue Eyes, a little Sinatra. You got any?
Pull up to the second window and we'll see you next crime.
Welcome to True Crime to Go. I am John, here with Jamie. How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. Is Old Blue Eyes Frank Sinatra's nickname? Am I making that up?
I don't know. We'll go with it. I mean, okay. It is what we say it is, right? Is that not how things work?
Well, the great thing about a podcast is that people can't talk directly back to us. So
the other great thing is they can leave a rating and a review. So go ahead and leave us a 5-star and tell us how right we are.
Yeah, even if I'm wrong. I just Googled it while you were talking. That is who it applies to. Old Blue Eyes, Frank Sinatra. We've got a crime story, John, about his kid today.
I had no idea that his kid was wrapped up in a kidnapping. So we're going to be talking about the 1963 kidnapping of Frank Sinatra Jr. This was a crime committed by a group of amateur criminals with a half-baked plan, but one that managed to shake the Sinatra family nonetheless.
And this all happened just a few weeks after one of the darkest moments in our country's history. This was shortly after the assassination of President John F. Kennedy, which we covered a couple of months ago, and hopefully we have an update on that soon if they ever release those records. Our story today starts with two childhood friends from L.A., Barry Keenan and Joe Amsler.
Both were 23 years old, and both were down on their luck. And unfortunately, they were both looking for a quick way to make some money. But instead of finding a job or investing in a business, they decided that they wanted to try to do things the easy way. And of course, that was to kidnap someone who was rich and demand a ransom. And who better than Frank Sinatra's son at the time?
I was just watching the episode of The Office where Michael's trying to get hold of David, and he calls and says he's kidnapped son to try to get a hold of David. Of course, he backs off of it pretty quickly, but this is not a good thing to joke about, right? This is somebody's kid. Now, at the time he was kidnapped, though, he was 19 years old. So they're not kidnapping a baby or a toddler, but he was trying to make a name for himself in the music industry. And they had been following him for weeks, watching his movements, getting his habits, and waiting for the right time to strike. And on December 8th of 1963, they made their move.
So Sinatra Jr. was performing at Harrah's Club Lodge in Lake Tahoe near the California-Nevada border. And it was a normal night for him, just another stop on his tour as he tried to build his career. I didn't even know that Sinatra's son was in the music biz.
Right, same.
But just after 9 p.m., Keenan knocked on the door of Sinatra's dressing room and pretended to be delivering a package. And as soon as the door opened, he and Amsler burst in. They tied a piece of tape, they blindfolded the young singer, and they dragged him out of a side door to their waiting car.
Now, what's crazy is that Sinatra's friend managed to free himself almost immediately. He ran out for help, and within minutes, the authorities were notified. They started setting up roadblocks. Police were on high alert. This was a high-profile individual that had been taken, that had been abducted. And the kidnappers were actually pulled over by officers, but here's the weird part. They bluffed their way out of it. They told officers that Sinatra was just drunk and they were taking him home. Somehow, they believed it.
It is absolutely crazy, but at the same time, it's really not. You know, 19-year-old boy, drugged up.
Yeah.
You know, it's not unbelievable. Meanwhile, of course, the FBI was already involved. I mean, this is a high-profile issue and it was a kidnapping. Even though, what is it called when you kidnap an adult?
I think it's an abduction.
An abduction.
Yeah.
By 9:40 p.m., their Reno office was coordinating with agents in California, and their assumption was obvious, and it was correct. The motive was money. They wanted to get a ransom. So the FBI advised Sinatra Sr. to wait for the ransom demand, pay it, and then let them track the money to the kidnappers. Is that normal? I mean, maybe that's normal protocol then. I'm asking, is that normal protocol now? I don't know that it is.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think we see it in movies all the time, but how does this play out in real life? think a lot of times you just don't pay it and wait and see what happens, or you try to mark the bills because kidnappers are going to say, give me all the money in small unmarked bills or whatever. But this was the demand that came in. They were wanting $240,000, which is about $2.3 million in today's money. Sinatra was good for it. He immediately gathered the cash, probably between the pillows and his couches, and handed it over to the FBI. The drop was arranged at Sepulveda, California, between two parked school buses in the middle of the night. Again, this sounds just like a movie demand.
Keenan and Amsler picked up the money while their third friend and accomplice, John Irwin, was the one tasked with keeping an eye on Sinatra Jr. And here's where things took a turn. So Irwin, the third friend and accomplice, started to panic. The pressure was simply too much for him, so he made an executive decision, and that was he just simply let Sinatra go.
I bet his one directive from his co-conspirators
was, not let this guy go.
You have one job. Yeah. Don't let him go.
Three's a crowd, right? Don't bring in the third guy.
Sinatra Jr. wandered around for a few miles, eventually finding a security guard who smuggled him in his mother's house in Bel Air, hidden in the trunk of a patrol car to avoid the media. Trying to avoid a media circus, I guess, but it sounds like this may get more attention than just having him in the backseat of a patrol car. So the ordeal was over. The young singer was safe. But how did they catch the guys, John?
Yeah, well, the FBI did not waste any time tracking these down. They already had some clues. Sinatra had heard their voices. They had fingerprints that were found on the duct tape, or the tape that was used to bind his Sinatra Jr.'s friend. And they even traced the ransom money back to the criminals. But they didn't even have to work hard. So John Irwin, the guy who panicked, ended up confessing to his brother, and then his brother immediately called the FBI to report what had happened. So, man, I bet they hate John Irwin.
Yeah.
Wow.
John blew the whole thing. Hours later, they ended up catching Keenan and Amsler, and almost all the ransom money was recovered besides the little bit that they had spent. Then we go to trial, of course. The defense tried to argue that Frank Sinatra Jr. staged this whole thing as a publicity stunt, which, remember, part of this story is that they hid him in the trunk of a car, so there wouldn't be any publicity. So how is he really doing this? I don't know why they thought that would work.
Well, it didn't fly. The FBI had solid evidence, including Keenan's own confession letter, which he had left in a safe deposit box. So he literally wrote down his entire plan and kept it stored away just in case he ever needed to prove that he was the mastermind. Like, hey, I just want to tell you, lady at the bar, I'm the guy. Let me take you to this bank deposit box and show you that I
wrote it down. Don't believe me? I wrote it down before it happened.
That's just
neither a time traveler or a kidnapper.
All three men were convicted. Keenan and Amsler were sentenced to life in prison, but they were later pardoned or paroled. And then get this, Barry later claimed that he had been suffering from a delusional disorder at the time of the crime, and even suggested that he had received divine inspiration for the kidnapping. So if all else fails in your defense, you can just say that God made you do it.
Apparently, that's what he tried to do. Sinatra Jr. went on and apparently had a music career that allowed him to make a living, but obviously didn't land him on our record shelf. Frank Sr. he was really shaken by this, and he started carrying a roll of dimes in his pocket just in case he needed to defend himself. If you don't get that, you clench your hand around the roll of dimes, and it makes it pack a little more pop when you
deliver a strike. I legitimately thought this was like a Ninja Star situation where you throw the dimes at someone.
Yeah, I've always heard a roll of quarters, but maybe had small hands.
Yeah, small hands. Tiny hands, Sinatra. That's what they used to call them other than blue eyes.
Actually, the reason was because they used to use payphones to negotiate ransom. He wanted to make sure he could use a payphone whenever he could.
Fair enough.
Which, I guess you're Frank Sinatra. You can just demand anybody's phone you want. But, yeah, this is a story about a famous person that was kidnapped that I had never heard of. So I'm sure there are more of these, and this is the kind of stuff we bring you here on True Crime to Go. It's a crime story in 10 minutes or less.
Would you like crime with that?
You've listened to True Crime Cast. distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.